Chapter 16. The Bulls. After the events of March involving the uncanny mutilation of the calf, followed by the equally bizarre appearance of the phantom predators, things were relatively calm at the ranch. But Tom mentioned at the very beginning of April that something just did not feel right. He felt this way whenever the phenomenon was close by. It manifested itself as an unaccountable feeling of oppression, a feeling that someone or something was watching, waiting to act. In short, he told us, it was a very uncomfortable sensation, like something bad was about to happen. And it did. On April 2nd, Tom called me to report that yet another calf had mysteriously disappeared from the well-fenced property. This was the fifth animal to disappear in 1997 without explanation. At the same time, Tom observed that a long-term ranch dog had disappeared and hadn't been seen for a couple of days. Again, he found it unbelievable that five animals could disappear without any signs or tracks. His frustration level mounted. Animals were disappearing under his watch without explanation and without any physical clue that might assist the NIDS investigation. Tom's bizarre story led me to organize an expedition to the ranch the following day. The team, which included a very accomplished and seasoned investigator from Canada, arrived the following afternoon. It appeared we had just missed another incident by a couple of hours. As soon as I set foot on the property, I could feel that the atmosphere was laden with a thick, creepy miasma. I noticed the dogs huddled in their kennels, looking very intimidated. Tom and his wife were very shaken. This had been one of the very rare occasions when Ellen had ventured onto the ranch since leaving the previous August. We repaired to the central command post to hear his story. Two major episodes had occurred within less than 24 hours. On the afternoon of April 2nd, Tom and Ellen had set off toward the west end of the ranch on a routine mission to spot and count the animals. As they passed the bull enclosure, both of them looked fondly and proudly at the four burly bulls in the corral. They truly were magnificent beasts, two each of pure black Simmental and black Angus, each weighing more than 2,000 pounds, with muscles rippling healthily beneath the shiny black coats that perfectly reflected the setting afternoon sun. The animals made the Gormans proud. Ellen said wistfully, "I would go out of my mind if I lost any of those animals." Tom nodded in agreement as they drove west on the narrow dirt track past the corral. 45 minutes later, they drove back. All the animals seemed to be accounted for, but they could not shake that nagging feeling of unease. An unnatural calm hung over the property, broken only by the sound of the truck engine. Abruptly, Ellen screamed and pointed out the windshield. Tom hit the brakes, fearing he was about to run over something. He followed her finger and gasped. The corral was empty. Tom's stomach knotted. Each of those four registered bulls was worth thousands of dollars. They were irreplaceable. Tom looked into Ellen's tear-stained face. They stopped the truck by the empty corral, and he got out to search for some evidence that the four magnificent animals could have left behind. Tom's knees felt weak. There was no sound as he walked around the corral. Tom walked around looking at the footprints in the corral. The animals had been there only 45 minutes ago. Ellen was sobbing in the truck. His search meandered over to an old small white trailer located at the west end of the corral. There was no entrance to the trailer from the corral except a door that was tightly locked and hadn't been opened in years. As he passed the trailer, he glanced in. Tom froze. All four animals were standing silently, crammed into the tiny space. They seemed frozen, hypnotically, and appeared to be barely conscious. Tom, with relief flooding through his veins, yelled loudly for Ellen. At the same time, he banged forcefully on the side of the metal trailer. The noise seemed to break the silent spell. Instantly, all four animals appeared to wake up. They began kicking and bellowing to get out of the narrow, confined space. Within seconds, the four huge animals went berserk and devastated the interior of the trailer. Finally, a metal door was kicked out, and instantly all four animals tumbled blindly out the broken door and began stampeding in a panic. It took Tom and Ellen several hours of cajoling and skillful cowboy tactics to get the four panicked animals safely back into their corral. Night had fallen by the time they were finished. Silently, they drove the 25 miles to their home. Both were physically and emotionally drained. As soon as Tom had finished his story, we tumbled out of the command and control headquarters and, with cameras and instruments in hand, ran the 20 yards to the corral where the four huge bulls stood. The animal seemed wary, almost jumpy. I walked over to the tiny trailer and noticed the locked door, bolted with a piece of barbed wire through the bolt. Inside the devastated trailer, I carefully examined the inside of the door. This door was the only possible entrance point from the corral to the cramped interior of the trailer. I noticed the extensive cobwebs on the inside of the door. There was no evidence that the door could have been opened without disturbing the layers of cobwebs. As Tom had said, the inside of the trailer was thoroughly trashed. Bull dung was everywhere. The stench was strong. I emerged quickly from the foul-smelling, cramped space and marveled that such huge animals could even fit inside such a small area. We then began a systematic sweep of the corral and surrounding area using the small portable instruments that were part of our tools of the trade. Right away, we realized that the metal bars of the enclosure, especially in the region near the trailer, were highly magnetized. The needle of the magnetic field detector went off the scale when we applied the instruments to the bars of the corral nearest the trailer, but the magnetic field was absent on the other side of the enclosure. Something had apparently magnetized the bars of the corral nearest to where the four animals had been found. We repeated the measurements every few minutes. Our team also began taking multiple photographs, and we videotaped the entire area, including the wary bulls. They gazed suspiciously at us as we roamed the area, systematically checking for any additional unusual radiation. There was nothing apart from the strongly magnetized metal bars of the corral, which diminished as time went on. 48 hours later, the magnetic field was barely detectable. We stopped our investigation as the sun was setting. On the way back to the command and control center, we noticed that the dogs were still hiding in their kennels. One blue heeler was whimpering softly. As we unpacked the instruments we had brought with us, Tom began relating the second incident that had happened only a few hours earlier. Tom and Ellen had gone to the west end of the property to check on the herd that was grazing. After the inexplicable incident the previous day in which their bulls had briefly disappeared, they were on the lookout for anything unusual. All seemed quiet as they parked their truck in the pasture. They watched dozens of well-cared-for animals grazing nearby. 50 yards away, one of the cows wandered casually toward a bright blue salt lick that lay between the two straight lines of poplar trees that jutted 100 feet into the air. Tom watched as the animal suddenly stopped dead in its tracks and, head lowered, began to back away from the salt. Tom gently nudged Ellen and pointed. Ellen jumped nervously and turned her head toward the animal. She, too, watched as the cow, transfixed with fear, was literally backing away from something invisible as fast as its legs could move. Tom reached through the window of his truck and grabbed his compass. He had learned a long time ago that strange events caused the compasses to act strangely. The frightened cow had now backed 30 yards away and suddenly turned tail and stampeded toward the eastern end of the pasture. Tom then watched as the herd of cows suddenly split in two in Red Sea fashion, as if something invisible was now in the middle of the herd of cattle. Dozens of animals ran west, while the remainder stampeded east. Tom glanced briefly at his compass and saw that the needle was pointed to the invisible something in their midst. Whatever was dispersing the cows was invisible even in the noon sun, yet it was exuding a powerful magnetic field that was detectable on Tom's compass. Tom and Ellen could follow the mysterious, invisible object as it made its way through the herd of animals, as the panicky animals were constantly stampeding away from it. Whatever it was heading south, as did the needle of Tom's compass. Sitting in his seat in the command and control center, Tom told us, "The needle of the compass stayed locked onto that thing for exactly 11 minutes. So, there had been two magnetic field effects at different ends of the ranch in less than 24 hours. That is the first vague pattern that I've seen so far," I commented. The next 2 days were uneventful as the team divided up and began systematically mapping the ranch for the magnetic and electric fields that appeared to be diagnostic of the presence of the phenomenon. But apart from the magnetic field that radiated from the bars of the western part of the corral near the small white trailer for a couple of days, we saw nothing. Mapping the south side of the ranch with its acres of dense Russian olives and thick brush was slow and tough going. Tom took us to a region in the brush where he had come across unusual tracks a few days previously. The tracks were perfectly round and appeared to be from some mechanical object rather than from a known animal. The team took plaster casts of the mysterious tracks. Then, as we were quartering the ground about 20 yards away, an overpowering stench of musk assailed my nostrils. I spent enough time on the ranch to know the difference among fox, skunk, and this particular odor. It was very strong and appeared localized. I carefully looked around. I could see another team member, the experienced Canadian investigator, about 50 yards away, making noise as he searched the dense brush for tracks. Suddenly, the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. A chill ran down my spine. Something was close by and watching me. The locus of the strong musk odor was coming from my right, and I slowly turned my head in that direction. But as my eyes quartered the area, I could see nothing. Since it was broad daylight, I could only conclude that I was either imagining things or else there was something well camouflaged nearby. This was one of the very few times in the hundreds of days that I spent on the property that I ever felt physically threatened. I gritted my teeth and continued the mapping. Gradually, the intensity of the musk-like stench began to recede, and, at the same time, I began to sense that whatever was close by had left. Later, the Canadian investigator told me that he, too, had suddenly become aware of being watched. He could not explain it. He had also smelled the strong musk odor. Tom, who was a lifelong hunter and was familiar with the scent of all wildlife in the area, swore the smell was associated with the phenomenon, whatever it was. That smell came back to haunt us repeatedly throughout our research program on that ranch, appearing suddenly, without warning, sometimes in a highly localized way, sometimes right inside our command and control center. Whatever it was, its invisibility sure gave it an advantage over us. At about this time, we began to move around the ranch accompanied by dogs that served as biosensors. The dogs were much more adept than we were at picking up traces of the phenomenon. Throughout that period in early April, the dogs continued to act as if something was wrong. At the same time, I noticed that eerie sensation of an unusual presence in the environment. It was nothing I could put my finger on, a sustained uneasiness and an inner expectation that all hell could break loose at any time. Was I imagining things? We were in the command and control center, planning our midnight watch on April 7th, when the phone rang. It was Julia Sanchez, our neighbor who lived a couple of hundred yards east of us in a trailer. Her excited voice told us to get outside now. Three UFOs were heading our way. Three of us stumbled quickly out of our trailer and searched frantically around the sky. An eerie silence hung over the property, but there was no sign of low-flying UFOs. Sanchez later told us that the family had seen UFOs on several occasions in the past few days, and this was only the latest incident. We searched the night sky for half an hour with night vision binoculars, but saw nothing unusual. We spent hours out there looking at the occasional meteor. The dogs were beginning to act normally again. I began to wonder if the phenomenon, whatever it was moving on. The air itself seemed less threatening. A day and a half later, the rain began. The downpour began on the afternoon of April 9th and seemed to intensify as the sun set. In northeastern Utah, a rain downpour can be pretty severe. Visibility drops significantly, and the ground itself becomes an oily, dangerous quicksand where a car can slide quickly into a ditch and get stuck. At midnight, as we tried to prevent our fishtailing vehicle from sliding into the 4-foot-deep canal, I spotted a dim light at about 200 yards to the south. The team had been scanning the area for hours. Now, suddenly, this light had appeared out of nowhere. We knew that area comprised very thick brush, and as the rain hammered down on the vehicle roof, I decided to reconnoiter up to higher ground to see if we could get a fix on the object. We maneuvered the sliding vehicle away from the canal and drove a couple of miles off the property to a ridge where we could see the entire ranch from above. The rain appeared to be getting even heavier as we climbed out of the vehicle. Within minutes, we were soaked as we scanned the terrain below for any sign of the mysterious light. I trained the Generation 3 night vision binoculars, and instantly, a large bright light on the ground became apparent. I moved the binoculars away from my eyes, and I could see the dimly lit object only as a barely discernible, faint, dirty yellow light. Through the infrared night vision binoculars, the object looked like a very bright, large white beacon resting on the ground about a mile below us. This curious discrepancy would become more meaningful later on in the summer. I knew we were insufficiently equipped to negotiate the dangerous terrain below in what was perhaps the heaviest rainstorm I had ever experienced, so we contented ourselves by mapping the location of the object so we could return there when the rain diminished slightly. At 3 a.m., we called it a day and returned to the command and control center. The next day, when the rain had subsided, we spent 8 hours searching in the deep brush for evidence of the object, but found nothing. The following morning, we were awakened when Tom and Ellen arrived to take a look at the cattle. It had been a couple of days since they had visited. They needed a break after those disturbing early April experiences. As the Gormas took seats in the command and control center, one of the team members casually switched on the portable magnetic field detector to check for battery power. Instantly, the needle jumped off the screen. The disturbance centered on Ellen Gorman. We had previously carefully calibrated the inside of the command center to make sure we knew which appliances, instruments, and areas produced magnetic fields. We had a recognizable and consistent baseline magnetic field footprint for the inside of the command center. This dramatic surge in magnetic field intensity was inconsistent with anything we had previously seen. It was strongest about 2 feet from Ellen. When she left the trailer, the field had disappeared, and a few minutes later, when she re-entered, there was no field present. Although we repeatedly checked the same area of the command center for magnetic fields, no recurrence of the intense magnetic field ever happened. We checked the instrument itself and compared with other instruments. It was working normally. We ruled out instrument malfunction. Again, a mysterious magnetic anomaly had occurred that was strong, but frustratingly brief. But we had still little or no data that was reproducible or robust, certainly nothing that would constitute strong evidence of anomalies or that could be reported to the Science Advisory Board. Following the magnetic surge, events appeared to return to normal on the ranch. The dogs began running and chasing around the property, as they had not done for 10 days. The cattle settled down and were less likely to stampede in response to unseen stimuli. The previous 10 days had seen multiple fleeting events that seemed to indicate something in the environment, but nothing that we could measure or even see. By the end of April, it was becoming frustratingly clear that the well-laid NIDS Phase 1 plans to initially obtain robust personal sightings by the scientific team were not coming to fruition. Instead, the team was encountering tantalizingly brief anomalies, few of which were repeated and even fewer were measurable. It was more than 6 months since the NIDS team had initially deployed with the expectation that Phase 1 would be complete within a few weeks. In May 1997, the NIDS team had a series of enclosures built on the ranch to house the dogs. The dogs had shown consistent patterns of being alert to whatever was in the environment and had always been able to warn us by their barking. We had learned to watch the dogs closely. In most cases, aberrations in their behavior signal the beginning of some kind of unusual activity. The large wire enclosures measured about 80 feet by 20 feet by 15 feet high, and at each end, a wooden viewing platform was constructed so that team members could see the area from a vantage point 20 to 25 feet away. They looked like large deer hunting stands, only much more robust. Three structures were positioned at the east end, middle, and west end of the property. The enclosures were struck by either some very skilled intruders or by what seemed to be a torrent of poltergeist-like activity. Persons unknown would routinely open the doors, padlocks would vanish, and the dogs would escape by unknown means. Even the strong wiring that secured the inner doors would vanish mysteriously. It would take considerable effort for someone to mount this kind of consistent interference and damage without leaving tracks or any signs of intrusion. Throughout this period, we deployed teams on night watches to try and catch the perpetrators, but without success. mysterious interference continued at a frenzied pace throughout the month, but nobody was ever caught, in spite of multiple stakeouts by trained investigators. We never found any direct evidence of intruders in the 9 dozen instances of interference with the 3 enclosures. And throughout this period, the dogs were very jumpy. By the end of May, when the interference with the enclosures had finally died down and the dogs' behavior began to return to normal, the activity on the ranch took a dramatic shift.